Blog Talk Radio.
Era noapte târziu.
It was very late at night.
Stăteam pe o piatră afară.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lui Stan i-am arătat piatra că n-o fă la mine.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stam și mă gândeam ce-am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Și odată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România mă urmări cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy, they always try to run me over with cars.
După mine și aici.
So I thought, they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină.
But it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit.
The light surrounded me.
Și din lumina m-a auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești tu disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why did you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-ai lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am un implicat cap.
I don't have a bed to let my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Te-am adus aici că țara asta va.
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă ard aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut, nu.
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California. Do you see what I've shown you? This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pentru.
And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va.
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York. This is a Sodom and Gomorrah. In one day it will burn. And then he showed me Florida. This is Florida. This is a Sodom and Gomorrah. And in one day it will burn.
You've been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitri Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
Once again, as always, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. Before we get started, I must apologize. I am a bit under the weather. I don't usually get allergies. I've always been a pretty healthy guy other than the gout and the arthritis. But man, this ear is killing me. So my eyes are watery and itchy. My nose is runny. I am not feeling at all up to par, yet here I am because I promised you I would be here. And I am a man of my word. I've always strived to keep my word whenever possible. This is why I don't give my word very often. Because when I promise somebody something, I do my utmost to follow through. I do my utmost to actually do what I promised I would do. And I know that in today's day and age, that's odd. Let's call it that. Let's call it odd. Because if I said it was rare, then you'd think I was, boasting. But if we call it odd, then it's just strange, because wherever you turn, whatever the context, whether preachers or politicians, nobody's striving to keep their word anymore. And the average citizen, the average individual, the person who invested whether their time and resources in a church body or their vote in a political party, it seems as though they're destined to be forever disillusioned. They're destined to be forever disappointed because nobody strives to keep their word anymore. Nobody strives to be the way men are supposed to be the way Christians are supposed to be, where your word is your bond. Remember those days? We don't have to sign a contract. My word is my bond. Those days are long gone. Now, if you want to get somebody to mow your lawn, you have to make them sign waivers in case they, you know, get a paper cut from one of the grass blades. They don't sue you or something. This is what the world has come to. It's not for the better. It always astounds me when people equate progress with betterment. We've not been bettered in our character as the human race with the onset of progress. We've not been bettered in our demeanor. We've not been bettered in the way we interact with other human beings. We've not been bettered insofar as our patience goes. People are becoming worse with each passing day. You can see it. You can feel it. Whether you're driving and somebody cuts you off and then they slam on their brakes because they want to make a point, even though you were going the speed limit, you know. Or you're at the store and somebody gives you the evil eye because, well, you know, you happen to patronize that place and actually keep them employed by buying, you know, a mango and some spinach. People are just getting stranger and stranger. I don't know. It's something I've been noticing lately. It's something that has been standing out. It's not that I've been trying to ignore the idea. It's not that I've been trying not to notice, but it's becoming more pronounced is the best way I can put it. When something becomes pronounced and it stands out, and I notice it repeatedly, it forms a pattern. And when I start noticing this pattern, I'm all right, something's do this. And I know that those of you listening to the program today or those of you listening to the recorded audio are likely in the same boat. You're noticing the same thing. And so I'm just bouncing this idea off of you because it might just be me. It might just be that people in Wisconsin are getting worse, but that people in New York are perfectly, you know, legitimate and happy and smiling, or people in North Carolina or wherever you might be. But I get the sense that generally speaking, people are becoming more ill-tempered. Their fuse is getting shorter by the day. And I fear that it won't take much to detonate an already smoldering powder keg. It's just a feeling that I've been having of late. And it doesn't just have to do with politics, although that plays into it, because I've seen people that are blood relations almost get into fist fights over who they voted for or over who they didn't vote for. But it's just this general malaise, this general discomfort and unhappiness. I can't put my finger on it. I can't really put it into words, but I know that you know what I'm talking about. There's that feeling in the air that something's not quite right. And it's only growing. But anyway, this is the Light of Truth radio broadcast, in case I haven't mentioned it. I am your host, Michael Boldea, with the itchy eyes and the runny nose. And I'm in a bit of a quandary because, well, nothing happened this week. At least nothing, you know, newsworthy. So I'm at a loss for what we're going to be discussing. I kid, of course. The question is, where do we begin? Because a lot happened this week. And it's just amazing to me how out of touch those reporting on what is happening in the world can be and how manipulative they get when it comes to protecting their agendas. You know, a while ago during one of the broadcasts, I said you'd be hearing the term fake news a lot more often. What I didn't make evident and what I couldn't really foresee at the time was that the idea of fake news would get turned on its head and it would be used as a weapon against those that started the meme of the fake news. And it's not even surprising anymore. It's not even something that you're like, wow, I can't believe they said that. Because they march in lockstep. Whatever news station you happen to be on, you change it to the other news station, and they're using the exact same talking points, the exact same language, the exact same syntax. And so you know that this is a coordinated effort, and it's continual, and it's ongoing, and it's never ending. Look, this is propaganda on steroids. There is no other way around it. There's no other way to define it. It's simply propaganda on steroids. And I think that it will come back to bite them in the haunches, because you can only cry wolf so many times. You can only cry wolf so often for so long before people simply start to tune you out and no longer buy what you're selling. And man, for the last 100 days, somebody's cried wolf. Now, I realize that the predominant topic is Russia, and Russia is guilty of everything from, I don't know, making you gain weight to the atmosphere being smoggy to everything in between. Because some people are so deluded in their mindset that they cannot take responsibility for their failures. Their ego, their id, will not allow them to take responsibility for their failures. And so they have to blame somebody. And why not the Russians? Why not pick a fight with one of the other superpowers of the world? Because that always ends well when you pick a fight with another superpower. But they don't care. They're obsessed. They don't care about fallout. They don't care about collateral damage. They don't care about people's reputations being tattered and torn, even though they did nothing criminal or they did nothing wrong. They care. They are zealots in the truest sense of the word. They are zealots. And if they have to destroy their own reputations and risk their own jobs in order to repeat certain demonstrably false talking points until they're blue in the face, then that's what they will do. Everything is fascistic nowadays. That's another term that's becoming very popular. Fascist. Everyone is either a fascist or a racist or a misogynist or some variation of a term with a negative connotation. And what's worse is that because it's being repeated so often, passionately, some people are starting to believe it, buying into the idea without anyone having properly defined what it is they're buying into. You see, this is what happens when words no longer mean things. When we define what a word means based on how we're feeling, rather than by the definition set forth in, oh, I don't know, Webster's Dictionary. A fascist is a totalitarian. A totalitarian simply removes opposition. They simply remove obstacles, and oftentimes they do so in a permanent fashion. the fact that all of these overpaid buffoons can spout off about fascist this and fascist that on television proves that nobody's a fascist. And that fascism, as they put it, is not alive and well in America. It's just astounding to see these things play out. It's the best drama on television, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's also sad because it goes to show that these people care not a whit about the well-being of the nation. They care not a whit about the notion of unity, because we're dragging that dead horse all over the place. Unity! They don't care about unity. They don't care that it's weakening the nation. They simply don't care. If they're not in power, they're going to be petulant children and try to obstruct wherever they can. But like I said, I think the pendulum is about to swing because people are just sick and tired of being lied to, of being handled, of being played, of being manipulated, and of having propaganda shoved down their throat every single day. Yet these people seemingly feed off of each other's lunacy to the point that now the Crypt Keeper herself is back in action. She's actually considering another presidential run after two failed attempts. Well, you know what they say, third time's the charm. But seriously, how delusional do you have to be to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result? It's astounding to me that some of the most powerful media outlets in this country are giving wind to her sails, and they're actually agreeing with the idea that she'll have a chance in 2020. It's, look, again, you've got to call it the way you see it, you know, and absolutely nothing that anyone in this current administration can do that is good or noble or just or right in the eyes of these people. Well, you cured cancer? How dare you? Why do you hate people with AIDS? I don't. I just found a cure for cancer, that's all. You found a cure for cancer because you hate people with AIDS. Admit it. Shame on you, sir. Shame on you. And this is how the media and the political opposition reacts to absolutely anything. And I mean anything that the current administration does. Look, just yesterday, they were protesting at the White House because James Comey got fired. If you don't know who James Comey is, he was the director of the FBI. But I'm sure you know because the man liked his camera time. Rather than be that in the shadows investigative, you know, leather foot, he liked the limelight. He liked to be the center of attention, if you will. But yeah, he was the director of the FBI. And he was let go. He was fired. At the recommendation of the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General. That's right. See, all of these buffoons on television talking about a coup and talking about how horrible it is that Donald H. Trump would dare fire someone like Comey. By the way, these are the same people that were calling for his dismissal weeks ago, days ago. But it was the recommendation of the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General. And all that Donald Trump did was accept the recommendation of the AG and the DAG. Funnily enough, The same people that were calling for Comey's head on a plate when he reopened the investigation into Hillary Clinton's inappropriate behavior are now protesting his firing in front of the White House. As I said, you can never make these people happy, no matter what you do. The only thing they were gleeful about was the continuing budget resolution, apparently. And if you listen to last week's program, you know how I feel about that little turd muffin. That's the only thing that seemingly they were willing to accept. That's the only thing that contented them was the budget that everyone else thought was pathetic. But one thing that is becoming ever more evident is something that has been bandied about on and off, and that is the existence of the deep state within the corridors of power, which are actively trying to continue promoting and pushing their own agenda. And when they started talking about this notion of a deep state, they were mocked and ridiculed, and people were rolling their eyes and snickering in the corner. But I do think that at this point, with all the evidence that has been piling up, it is an undeniable truth that something akin to the deep state does exist within the U.S. government. And those people were taken by surprise with the result of this past election, because they just didn't think that the guy who pretended to fire people on a quasi-cheesy television show on NBC actually had a chance of pulling it off. They never thought in a million years that he would win and become the 45th president of these United States. And so they rested on their laurels. They thought they had job security. Man, 4 years of depends Barbie would just be a continuation of Obama's policies. So they weren't going anywhere. And then boom, their worst nightmare came to life. And they're scrambling, man. And there's nothing like throwing a wrench in the machinery to make them scramble. It's the whole sewer rat analogy all over again. They're cornered now. And they're getting dangerous. And we haven't seen the last of anything. Yes, the Russians still did it. Just ask Maxine Waters. Even though there's no evidence, again, no evidence of collusion. But then again, when has evidence or lack thereof ever stood in the way of a good narrative for the Democrat Party? It's just, I keep promising myself that I'm not going to talk about politics in this, and then you have a week like this, where it's just astounding to see what these people said less than a month ago and what they're saying now. Look, how exactly can this woman get away with saying that no, there is no evidence of Russian collusion, but that she believes it took place nonetheless? It is absolutely surreal and unreal. This woman is an elected official, and she is lobbing accusations at the President of the United States without an ounce of evidence to back them up. And we will likely be putting up with this for the next 4 years, give or take. And the more time passes, hear me out, the more time passes, the more unhinged these people will become. There's no such thing as courtesy or common sense anymore. There's no such thing as knowing when to shut up in this country anymore. Well, technically there is. Especially, you know, about the shutting up part, only if you don't have the pre-approved opinion. And you have, you know, countless 20-somethings now acting like petulant 5-year-olds, screaming and hollering and lashing out whenever they hear something or they're confronted with something that they don't like or that they don't agree with. On the whole, generally speaking, if you will, people just don't know when to bite their tongues. They think that every errant thought that crosses their beleaguered brain is worth spouting off. It's just astounding. What was it? The president just announced that he's launching a commission to investigate election integrity, which honestly should be something that everyone should get on board with, shouldn't it? I mean, we all want the electoral system to be fair and whatnot. We all want, you know, every vote to count. We all want fraud and other means of voter intimidation to cease, don't we? It should be something that, as they like to put it, should have bipartisan support. Unity. Bipartisan support. Well, I just ran across this article as I was doing the mic test before we went live. And I think it's very telling. Who is opposing this seemingly inoffensive commission? President Donald Trump, or at least his announcement that he is launching a commission to investigate election integrity, was only hours old before a politics professor at Rutgers University began organizing educators to resist the effort. So we need to identify whom and then identify what. Professor at Rutgers University. That's the who. The what is that they began organizing educators to resist the effort of launching a commission to investigate election integrity. On Thursday, the White House announced that the president would sign an executive order creating the commission and charging it with reviewing the 2016 election to determine if there was any widespread vote fraud or vote suppression. As I told you, during the election cycle, 1-3% was baked in the cake. That's about how much voter fraud took place, between 1-3%. And if this commission goes on, my opinion, let's put it that, my assessment will be borne out, I promise you. Now, the commission is to be headed by Vice President Mike Pence and Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, the White House said. The commission will review policies and practices that enhance or undermine the American people's confidence in the integrity of federal elections, a White House official reportedly told the Daily Caller. This will include reviewing laws and activities that lead to improper registrations, improper voting, fraudulent registrations. You don't say. Fraudulent voting? But that's not happening. Why do you think they're so resistant about voter ID laws? Why do you think they bend over backwards and start screaming bloody murder every time anybody brings up the notion of voter ID laws? Look, you need to have an ID in order to buy alcohol, cigarettes, collect unemployment, collect welfare, I guarantee you, the people that they're saying they want to protect already have ID. The only reason that they're opposed to voter ID laws is that because it would cut down on the fraud. That's it. Voter ID would cut down on the fraud, and they don't want that. Now, the commission would serve to fulfill another one of Trump's campaign promises to root out voter fraud. Just after his election, for instance, Trump said he would launch a major investigation into illegal voting. But the news of the new commission had barely been reported when a Rutgers political science professor began organizing her resistance to the effort to investigate voter fraud. Lorraine Carol Manit, a professor of political science as well as an associate professor of public policy at Rutgers University, Camden, jumped to an educator's lectern to enlist the participation of professors, teachers, and educators across the country to oppose Trump's commission. I'm going to put in a parenthesis here and remind you that this is who is teaching your children. If you have college-aged children and you are working your fingers to the bone and you don't recognize your own hands because of the calluses and the blisters and all it takes to earn a living and put food on the table, and yes, send your entitled child to college, this is who is teaching them. People like Madam Professor of Politics at Rutgers, who is now putting together a resistance against a commission that simply wants to do away with voter fraud. The message also circulated by Rick Hasen, a leader in urging academics to oppose any election integrity projects, called on the education community to resist participation in the commission. Yes, because why would you want election integrity? Heresy! I'd love to hear Maxine Waters' opinion on the matter. That ought to be good for a laugh or two. But yes, oppose any form of election integrity. If the president does indeed create a commission to study voter fraud and voter suppression in the American election system, to be headed by the vice president and Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, I'm calling on scholars of election administration to resist participation of any kind in such an effort. Look, you know that old saying, those that can't do teach? And yet, apparently, the academic class in this country thinks itself you're better. These stuffed shirts, buffoons who couldn't hack it out in the real world, who became molders of young and innocent minds, they're actively resisting an election integrity effort. Since when did academia garner so much power and influence in this country? I have college graduates coming and asking me for a job. I met a college graduate working the counter at McDonald's. Come on. We need to put academia in its place, because these are the people brainwashing your kids at, what, 60 grand a year. And then they turn around and say, we don't want no voter integrity. We don't want no election integrity. We'd never win again. Exactly. This is why they don't want integrity in the electoral process. Because they know that if this commission gets off the ground, and if it begins to implement parameters, and if, oh, I don't know, voter ID law passes, uphill climb to regain power will be all that much more difficult. So this professor, Rick Hasen, apparently says this: we should expect a Pence-Kobach commission to find, quote-unquote, evidence of rampant voter fraud across the U.S. and to recommend proposals to amend the Voting Rights Act and the National Voter Registration Act to require proof of citizenship to register and a national voter ID requirement, among other changes that will be damaging to voting rights and therefore damaging to democracy. So again, to ask someone to prove their citizenship, which is the only way that you are eligible to vote in this country, to actually ask someone to provide ID in order to elect the next president of the United States, that would be damaging both to voting rights and to democracy. I rest my case. Academia needs to be tarred and feathered, because it is what they deserve. If in your polluted, convoluted mind, you think that asking someone to prove their citizenship and actually show ID when they show up to the voting booth is damaging to democracy, you need to be in a straitjacket, not molding young minds. Not only did the Rutgers professor urge educators to turn their back on Trump's commission, but she went on to propose they create their own working group to present alternate facts to Trump's effort. Now, in case you don't know the modern day lingo, alternate facts are also known as lies. So basically, what this woman is attempting to do is not only turn its back on Trump's commission, she's attempting to undermine it and come up with lies in order to thwart election integrity. This woman needs to lose her job, because she's teaching what? Politics. This is unbelievable. She continues, high on her soapbox, drunk with impotence of her own power: I am proposing a commission of scholars and voting rights advocates to gather information and inform the public. The public's informed. Did you notice the last election? Yeah. The public is informed. Such a commission or a working group of some kind does not need the participation of partisan luminaries or politicians for credibility. With the assault on democracy underway, see, again, because they lost, because the Crypt Keeper, a.k.a. the Pence Barbie, lost, there is an assault on democracy underway. And this monolith of stupidity continues and says, the most important divide is not between Democrats and Republicans. It is between lies and truth, between democracy and authoritarianism. That's right, asking somebody to show ID when they show up to cast their vote for the most powerful position in the world is authoritarianism. And she continues and says, please email me if you would like to be involved in organizing non-partisan Commission on Voter Fraud and Voter Suppression to offer evidence and facts and analyses that the public will need to sort through what we can anticipate will come out of the Pence-Kobach Commission. I, for one, say, Godspeed, Mr. Pence. Godspeed, Mr. Kobach. I wish you well, and I wish that, yes, every state in the union had voter ID law, and that, yes, every single individual who showed up to vote had to prove their citizenship. We saw what happened in France, kids. We were this close to being in the same boat, rowing down the same brown river. Manit, Madame Manit, did not outline how this group might be nonpartisan. Of course not. Just anti-Republican, that's all. It doesn't have to be nonpartisan. No Republicans welcome. When so few conservatives or even Republicans work in the field of education. Aha, see, this is yet another thing. Very few conservatives or even Republicans work in the field of education, because conservatives and Republicans more often than not are entrepreneurial sort of people. They're pulled themselves up by their bootstraps sort of people. They're the kind of people that can do, so they don't have to resort to teaching, like Madame Manit. Responding to Professor Manit's proposition, a spokesperson for the Public Interest Legal Foundation said, the ink isn't even dry on the paper yet, and the resistance movement is already having fits. Why? Because the organized left is losing territory. It, for generations, has lorded over with an almost perfect monopoly. Now, if you want me to translate the not-so-politically correct version of what this person is trying to say, is that the Democratic Party has been lording over the poverty plantation for generations. I know I'm going to get blowback. I know I'm going to catch flack. You know it's the truth. The Democrats have been lording over the poverty plantation for generations. It's the gimme party. And so if they can give a little more government cheese, if they can give a little more benefit, if they can give a little more something to take from somebody else and give to someone that doesn't want to work, then they know that their vote is certain. How do you think Maxine Waters gets elected? And now they're seeing that slip away. And this person has it right. They just didn't have the backbone to call it as they see it. They didn't have the backbone to actually say, this is why. They've lorded over this segment of the population with an almost perfect monopoly. And this person concludes and says, tinkering with election rules is a final safe harbor for a partisan entity that has lost on ideas and finds itself in the political wilderness. This is how the left acts when you play in their sandbox. And those are very, very true words. And once again, I feel I must point this out. These are the people teaching your kids. Person is a professor who is categorically opposed to the idea of electoral integrity. Like I've said before, I don't think that the election would have had the same results had it taken place a few years later. Look, the constant brainwashing of the young in this country is absolutely mind-boggling. You have seemingly bright young people going gaga over Bernie the mad scientist Sanders and his socialism, not bothering to look around and see what socialism has done to countries such as Venezuela or Cuba, any other place. But that's beside the point, you know. Even though nobody was ever able to make socialism work, ever, well, you know, we're smarter than all of them and we can make it work, right? Is that the way it goes? Do we really think that we can make something that is a demonstrable failure work here because we'll do it different than how they did it? Ever, socialism has been tried. It has failed. That's it. No caveat, no except in this one place. And yet people gravitate towards it like a mosquito to a bug zapper. Now, all the stuff that's been going on hasn't just been in the U.S., you know. Globally speaking, there's also things going on, most relevant of which, of course, I think, was the French election. And the fact that, well, the French are as cowardly as their actions make them out to be. That's it. And the question that I have for the French people is this. Who will come to save you when they attempt to turn your country into an Islamic state? And when they start throwing people off of roofs or beheading them in public? Huh? Who will come to save you, you cowards? When they start throwing people off of roofs like it was nothing. Look, I know it was the Allies and the Americans who sacrificed their young in order to free you from the Nazis, but who, pray tell, do you expect to come and save you from the Islamists? Look, some nations deserve their fate. It's just the way it is. France now deserves everything it has coming to it because it made a choice. And it chose subjugation rather than freedom. That's it. It's not a mystery. It's not complicated. When it came down to it, either enough of France has been colonized by people who do not have France's best interests at heart, or the French are so weak and spineless that they chose to be slaves in their own nation. Either way, I do believe that France's fate is now a foregone conclusion. And within a generation, you're going to see Sharia law well and truly implemented there. What more can you say? Yeah, just don't expect us to come save you from yourselves. You lie in the bed that you make. You dance with the one who brung you. You live with the consequences of your action or the inaction of your consequences long after the initial event. I believe that we will see the ramifications of the French people's choice for decades upon decades to come. Because as history has proven time and again, socialism fails 100% of the time. And when you throw radical Islamists who like beheading people in broad daylight because it will bring honor to their God and his prophet, Well, let's just say, if you haven't seen the Louvre already, you should just probably take the Google tour. Because France is not going to be a pretty place in a matter of months. And it's, again, this is my conundrum. I can either talk about politics and be a little angry, or I can talk about what's happening in the church and be a lot angry. I ran across two articles this week that just made my hair stand on end. At first, I thought it was a farce. I thought it was a joke. You know, something someone put out in order to bait people into reacting harshly and angrily. But no, I traced the links, and it's a real story. In fact, both of them are. One is about a Christian swinger couple who use swinging to share the good news of Jesus and whatnot. And the other is about a Christian abortionist. So, where am I going to go with that? The one thing both of these stories have in common is that in both instances, these people somehow managed to justify their actions to themselves and even proudly proclaim their lunacy to the public based on feelings rather than on a biblical standard. Once again, we are confronted with the idea of feelings and how people feel about a thing. And based on their feelings, they rationalize the most ludicrous practices. Look, you cannot rationalize sin away. You cannot rationalize rebellion because you self-identify as a believer. The adage still holds true. A good tree bears good fruit. And a bad tree bears bad fruit. That's it. That's the litmus test. And your feelings don't matter a smidge. I don't care how you feel about something. I care about what God says about the topic. Look, man can rationalize every aberrant behavior under the sun. And they do. Because they don't have either a plumb line or a standard by which they must live. They can rationalize every sin known to man by using their feelings as the basis for their rationalization, or worse, by butchering the word of God to make it suit their chosen perversion and predilection. And the church is going along with it. In case I need to remind you, Christian swingers who use swinging as a means to minister, and a Christian abortionist who believes he's being kind and loving by killing babies. Look, every single time I dare to go to a news site or read a news feed, I'm all the more disgusted and disturbed by what men are passing off as perfectly fine Christian practice, and even encouraging others to follow in their twisted footsteps, because the more the merrier. And I guess if you can drag 10 or more with you, I don't know, you get a group discount when you walk through the gates of Sheol. And again, we need to bring it back to perspective here. If this is going on in supposed Christian circles, if this is going on among people who call themselves believers, people who call themselves saints, people who call themselves saints of God, if this is going on in the church, what expectation can we possibly have of those in the world? What expectation of righteousness can we possibly have of those who are in the darkness if those who purport to live in the light are practicing such things and justifying them? This is the question that we must answer. And this is the conundrum that I was faced with today. Again, a little angry or a lot angry. I guess I'm both. Because juncture. At this point, it's only a matter of time before judgment begins in the house of God. Not only is there no repentance in the house of God, outright perversion and outright sin and the murder of the innocent is being presented as something that God is in favor of. And with that, I leave you for today. Lord willing, we will be back here next Thursday. We will be live. Hopefully my eyes won't be as itchy or my throat is scratchy. But thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for taking the time. And until next time, may God bless you and may he keep you. And with that, Gino, it's all yours. Gino! I used to be a tenor.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth with Michael Boldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you.